Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's 5 minutes past 8 in Abuja and Yaounde. Elsewhere in Accra, it's 7:05. A very good morning to you all, our listeners in West Africa, and welcome to this edition of Africa Link. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, Kenya celebrates Madaraka Day, the day the country attained internal self-rule amid concerns of ethnic divisions in the coming days.
Despite the political situations that are in the country, I know that I need my brothers from Central, I need my brothers from Kalenjin, yes, that we can be able to unite and build our country.
Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari is to visit the Niger Delta region to launch a much-delayed program to clean up areas heavily polluted by oil spills.
People in the Ogoniland region have been living with pollution all their lives, and they've seen their livelihoods destroyed. They're no longer able to fish or to farm.
Also on the program, Somali authorities confirmed that at least 16 people were killed and 55 wounded in a car bomb and gun attack on a hotel in the center of Mogadishu. Stay tuned.
Top story.
On Wednesday, Kenyans from all walks of life came out in large numbers to celebrate Madaraka Day. This is the day the East African country attained internal self-rule 53 years ago. This year's celebrations were quite unique as leaders from both the opposition and the ruling party in Kenya held parallel events. And as expected, they exchanged a war of words over Kenya's electoral body impasse. From Nairobi, Andrew Wasike sent us this report.
For the first time, Kenyans held official Madaraka Day celebrations outside the Kenyan capital in Nakuru town in Rift Valley. In Nairobi, on the other hand, more than 300,000 opposition supporters thronged the inner city Uhuru Park for parallel celebrations organized by former Kenyan Prime Minister and leader of opposition Raila Odinga. While speaking in Nakuru town, Kenyan Deputy President William Ruto called on members of the opposition to abide by the law in ousting Kenya's electoral body to prevent unnecessary deaths and violence like those witnessed in 2007 during the post-election violence.
They cannot continue to torment the country with demonstrations every Monday. We expect them to respect the law as we respect the law as government, because not them, not us, are above the law.
Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta called on opposition leaders to use the same constitution that they fought for to legally disband Kenya's electoral body.
Inchi ni kubwa kushinda.
The country is more important than any individual. I want to say this. We need to understand that we may differ on certain issues, but there is no way that things can always go as one person or a group of people want. We should respect each other and follow the law of the land.
Kenyatta and opposition leader Raila Odinga had met on Tuesday and agreed to set up a 52-member team to resolve Kenya's Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission stalemate. During the Madaraka Day rally, Odinga, however, made it clear that the opposition would stand by their decision that the electoral body should be disbanded.
They are saying that dialogue can only be in parliament and that we should follow the constitution. We are following the constitution and we want them to start dialogue with us on Friday. If the dialogue starts, there won't be panic. But if you won't have dialogue, then on Monday we will go on with our protests.
Speaking to me on phone, East African security and political analyst George Musamali said that the Kenyan government agreed to negotiate with the opposition to avoid escalation of violence which has already flared up in various parts of Kenya.
I think the government is now compromising, basing on what is happening in the country right now. There's a lot of tension. We've seen opposition party members being killed by the police. And this was leading us into the dark days of the old system. Pressure has been exerted on the government to accept to talk to the opposition for purposes of unity of the country and also the security of the country.
Musamali warns that the writing is on the wall and that if IEBC doesn't pack up and leave, then Kenya may be pulled back into violence as members of the opposition have sworn to boycott the 2017 general elections if their demands are not met.
Andrew Wasike reporting from Nairobi. Elsewhere in the coastal town of Mombasa, DW's Eric Ponda caught up with some Kenyans who also voiced their concerns on the political situation in the country.
My name is Honorable Gertrude Mbeyu, the MCA Kibaran ward. We are not very worried because we know there will be a solution. The big deal is about the IEBC. If the president will sit with the COD members and resolve this, we are not worried. Our big worry is who to run the elections 2017.
My name is Sam Inyuno. I have come to celebrate the Madaraka Day. I think the IEBC is an issue for the common Mwananchi because we have a lot of things to fight for than the current IEBC the way it is. I think people should sit down and talk, and we concentrate on fighting the main thing, which is poverty.
My name is Ghalib Mohamed Athman. The current political situation is very hot. As I can see, majority of our Kenyan leaders are using our fellow youth for violence purposes instead of engaging them in development issues. A lot of people have been killed, people have shedded blood, and nothing has been achieved from demonstration.
And in Kisumu town, an opposition stronghold in Western Kenya, DW's John Mara also had a chance to meet with some of the residents there, starting with one who talks of the protests that have been happening the last few weeks.
My name is Samuel Awiti. We have been tear gassed. Yeah? Our party leader, Raila Odinga, have been tear gassed. So, okay, according to me, I can say it is not here to Uru. Why would the police use the live bullet?
My name is Simon Otenyo. Concerning Madaraka Day, I'm enjoying it, it's fine, but I feel our area is being neglected because if you look at the celebrations, it's better they would have taken the celebration to a bigger town like either Mombasa or our area Kisumu.
Bernard Otuko.
Madaraka Day is the day when we got self-internal government. It is a situation whereby we are able to unite, and as you see, the country is divided, it is polarized. Despite the political situations that are in the country, I know that I need my brothers from Central, I need my brothers from Kalenjin, yes, that we can be able to unite and build our country, because this is a country where we belong.
We were hearing voices of Kenyans marking Madaraka Day, the day when the country attained internal self-rule prior to gaining total independence 6 months later, thanks to all our correspondents who managed to get us those voices.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
Now, Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari will visit the Niger Delta region today for the first time since taking office a year ago. Nigeria has been hit by growing unrest in the country's oil-producing south by a new militant group calling itself the Niger Delta Avengers. The militant group has for years agitated for an independent state and wants international oil companies out of the region. During the visit, Buhari will launch a long-awaited cleanup of the area, which has been affected by oil spills. My colleague Mark Caldwell spoke to Joe Westby, a human rights campaigner at Amnesty International, and started by asking him how important this cleanup operation was for the Niger Delta in particular and Nigeria in general.
I mean, the people of the Niger Delta have been waiting for this cleanup operation for a long time, and we at Amnesty International have been campaigning for a long time. The UN exposed in a major report in 2011 how people in the Ogoniland region have been living with pollution all their lives, and they've seen their livelihoods destroyed, they're no longer able to fish or to farm, and almost more urgently, they're having to drink and wash and bathe in contaminated water, in some cases highly contaminated with toxic carcinogenic substances linked to oil pollution.
Your organisation, Amnesty, says that the oil companies should not be let off the hook. What can you tell us about their participation in this operation?
Shell has been the main operating company in the Niger Delta region for decades. And what the UN report also exposed was how hundreds and hundreds of spills in the region from Shell pipelines have not been properly cleaned up. For the government's cleanup program to be effective, Shell has to really overhaul its cleanup methodology, as the UN recommended, to make sure that when it does clean up means the contamination is actually gone and that the environment is restored.
Can you please give us some idea of the size of the operation that is needed? How many people on the ground? How much funding? And over what period of time?
The UN's report focused on Ogoniland, which is a fairly small region of the much larger Niger Delta area. It is a vast area, and the oil pollution has been a problem right across the whole oil-producing region. The UN said that it would take a minimum of 30 years just to clean up the small Ogoniland area that it focused on.
Do you think President Muhammadu Buhari has the political will and the stamina to see this through?
That's a good question. I mean, he certainly has committed to cleaning up the region and did that quite quickly when he came to office last year. And certainly his government has been active in visiting the region and talking with some of the affected communities, but it really needs to translate into meaningful action on the ground to decontaminate the water and to restore the environment.
Joe Westby, human rights campaigner at Amnesty International. Somali authorities have this morning confirmed that at least 16 people were killed and 55 wounded in a car bomb and gun attack on a hotel in the center of Mogadishu. Islamist militant group Al-Shabaab claimed responsibility for Wednesday's attack on Hotel Ambassador. Two lawmakers were among the dead. Well, while the attack was going on, my colleague Eunice Wanjiru was just on time to find out what was going on at the hotel by calling Hassan Istila, a freelance journalist in Mogadishu.
The situation in Mogadishu is very hard because it is difficult to know what is going on inside the hotel because of the government soldiers and Al-Shabaab are fighting inside the hotel. Now, one of the most popular hotel in Mogadishu, known as Ambassador Hotel, attacked the Al-Shabaab militant under control right now.
So what can you tell us about the hotel that is under attack and the people that were inside?
Really, some of the news I'm getting right now, the inside of the hotel says three Somali members of parliament managed to escape the scene.
And what about the hotel itself? Is it a hotel where you have high-end people coming, or is this just a normal hotel in Mogadishu?
The Hotel Ambassador is coming every day, member of parliament, international ambassadors, and the government officials who meet and work. Some of member of parliament are sitting in the hotel. The Al-Shabaab says we are carrying out dangerous attack and lethal attack took place in the Mogadishu. Somali Intelligence Security Agency says we have managed all the situation in Mogadishu. But when you see the situation in Mogadishu is very high these days because Somali government and Al-Shabaab is fighting inside the Mogadishu. Forget the regions of South and Central of Somalia. Now they are fighting inside the Mogadishu. The presidential police and some of UN compound in Mogadishu, they are fighting right now.
Okay, news has just come that US strikes killed an Al-Shabaab commander linked to Garissa attacks in Kenya. Could this already be retaliatory attacks, revenge attacks?
Yes, of course. The government of Somalia confirmed that they have killed one of the Al-Shabaab head of security after carrying out joint operation, the government of Somalia and their allies, special U.S. forces.
Hassan Istila, a freelance journalist in Mogadishu, telling us about the attack that claimed 16 people and wounded 15 others. It's now time for Crime Fighters, a Learning by Ear production. Enjoy the drama.
Deutsche Welle, Learning by Ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello, glad you could join us for Crime Fighters, Drugs to Cure, Drugs to Kill, by Mukoma Wangugi. This is episode 7, entitled To the Mountain Top. In Kitgum, Peter, the son of a rich family, has been poisoned with cyanide. The detectives discovered that Peter was on the trail of a powerful and dangerous counterfeit medicine ring. It turned out that the Minister of Health was involved. When Detective Kalumba and his colleague Salamisha interrogated him, he accused Peter's father of killing his own son.
Of course, Baba Peter was involved. I suspected as much from the moment he said he had no enemies despite his extravagant wealth. They say blood is thicker than water, but money is often thicker than blood. It made sense, but we needed first to talk to Baba Peter, then loop back to the hospital and speak to Dr. Kamkuta and his brother Malinya. Lights flashing, sirens blaring, and getting angry with every kilometer, Salamisha and I finally reached Baba Peter's house. The gates were opened immediately without us asking to be let into the compound. It was as if they were expecting us. A good sign or a bad one? We hoped it was good and that Baba Peter didn't yet know what we knew.
I'm glad you're here. I was about to call and ask whether you've found my son's killers yet.
We're very close, Baba Peter. We have just a few more questions, if that's okay with you.
Yes, of course.
Did Peter have a girlfriend?
Have you finally done your homework then, detectives?
You call this homework? We call it the search for truth and justice for the living. Your son is dead. Do you care about truth and justice, Baba Peter?
Do you have children, detective?
Yes, a 10-year-old boy.
And you, Detective Karumbi?
Kalumba. No, I don't. What's your point?
I loved my boy. I loved him very much. But we made different life choices. You wanted to do good in the world by giving away my money to the poor, healing the sick, turning water into wine. I, on the other hand, I love turning wine into oil and gold. Fathers and sons, it's always a struggle. If you had a son, detective, you'd understand that. I loved Peter more than I loved the gold. I realize that now that he's dead.
What happened next really brought home to me why Salamisha was such a formidable investigator. She took Baba Peter's hand and looked him in the eye, and her words pierced through all the years of deceit, murder and concealment that had ended in the death of his child.
It's over, Baba Peter. It's been over ever since Peter died. You know that, don't you? But you haven't mentioned Fuma, your servant. He was about to tell us something. What was it? You had him killed, didn't you?
Fuma was like a son to me.
A son? It seems people like you will eat their children, especially when they are not really theirs.
You bastards! You have no idea. I've lost two sons. I was Fuma's father too.
Huh?
What?
You can't imagine the pain. I've lost the two people in this world I love the most. And without them, what's all this worth? What's my money worth? I can't inherit it myself. You know what, detectives? I want you to leave now. I'm going to call my lawyer.
Listen, Baba Peter. How about we have something to drink, huh? Where's Mama Peter?
She hasn't been the same since Peter died. Depressed, sleeping a lot. Come back in the morning, detectives. Tomorrow.
What do you know? If it wasn't you who did it, you must still have an idea. Some suspicion as to why Peter was killed. And Fuma.
You know Peter had a girlfriend. A pharmacist. Look again. Look at all the places you've already been. It's the only way to get to the top. And once you get there, be sure to chop off the head, otherwise this monster will just keep on growing.
No, Baba Peter, enough of this. Tell us what you know for the sake of your son, or I better say your sons. It's not too late to give them justice.
It's all right there in front of you. But I'll spell it out, if that's what you want. The person who ordered Peter's death is the president of Ketagu. And for what? My son knew too much. He uncovered things that he should have left alone.
What things?
That the president was involved. That his campaign money was coming from counterfeit medicines.
Then why would someone say you had him killed? What's your involvement?
I think you know that already.
Hey, gun! He's got a gun! Hey, drop it! Drop it now!
Goodbye, detectives. Tell my wife I'm sorry.
We now had all the players, or if not all the players, I at least had my hand on the long, thick rope connecting greed to power. There were two more places we had to visit. We needed Dr. Kamkuta and his brother Malinya to confirm the connection with the president. We knew that the doctor wasn't directly involved. He was just protecting his brother. We also knew that the failed attempt to assassinate Malinya came from the very top. If Kamkuta confronted the president, being his official health advisor, he would be extremely vulnerable and isolated. So Salamisha and I figured that what we needed to do was offer him a way out. That, of course, was easier said than done. His secretary waved us through as if the doctor had been expecting us.
I trust you've come to tell me that you've found the people who shot my brother Malinya.
In a manner of speaking, but we're going to need your help.
Yes, of course. Anything. What do you need?
We need you and your brother to help us arrest the president.
The president? The president of Ketagu? Are you out of your minds, detectives?
Apparently so. And you're going to help us, because you have no choice.
I suppose you're right. Either way, we are dead. We know too much. If they went after Peter, they'll come after us as well. You don't take on the head of state and survive. At least, let's die fighting. Here, take this file. It contains the president's bank statements and other financial transactions.
How did you get them?
I saved his life. He trusted me once to take documents to his safety deposit box at the state bank. And now he's tried to take my brother's life to protect his drug empire. He didn't think I knew, and I didn't know for sure, but I thought I'd make a copy, just in case.
I guess there's no honor or trust amongst thieves.
I guess not. Let's go and see Mr. President.
Just like that?
I have his direct line. Let me call him. I'll say that two detectives have just visited my office and that they have proof. Hello? Mr. President? I have some news I thought I'd better bring to your attention right away. The two detectives... Yes, the ones investigating Peter's death. They were just here. They showed me some documents that suggest you might be... Yes, they are on their way. Thank you, Mr. President. I'm very glad to hear you say it's not a problem.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank him later, if you're still alive.
I'm afraid she's right. Good luck, detectives, and goodbye.
That's it for today. Don't miss the next episode, which is also the last of this series. Last chance for the detectives to arrest Peter's murderer. Can it really be the president? If you want to listen to this or any other of the previous episodes again, just click on dw.com/crimefighters. Or visit us on Facebook. Take care. Bye-bye.
And before we go, here's a quick reminder of our main stories. Kenya celebrated 53 years since the country attained internal self-rule from the British 53 years ago. Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari will visit the Niger Delta region for the first time since taking office. Al-Shabaab claims responsibility for a car bomb attack on the top Mogadishu hotel in Somalia, which killed at least 16 people. And one way you can comment on these stories is by sending an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, a letter to Africa Link DW531110 Bonn, Germany, or a text message to +491609575951. For more news, visit our webpage dw.com/Africa. I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn.